June 2001. 2 hours. Stay with us. Maybe you'll sit through the rest of this. It's me. I'm your host, Robert Norse, with you for the next 2 hours. Our last host, I guess relatively new to free radio, unless you had another spot, Devoid. You and I, you just reminded me, we met, 5 years ago in 1996 in a squat in New York City in the Lower East Side?
That's correct.
Wow, and I interviewed you there, and I probably played it on the ancestor of this station when it was in another place, actually, Free Radio Santa Cruz, same station, different location. And you at that time, I remember you folks opened up your hovel to me, and I appreciated every minute of it, man. I mean, the opportunity to be there. There was, how many people were in that squad, do you remember?
That's one of the larger ones, probably 20 to 25, but, you know, you got people coming in and out all the time, you know. Floor space is always open to travelers, nomads of all kinds.
This was in the, close to the winter. We were talking December, as I remember, when I visited. It was really great. I guess some guys came down to the studio. I was in New York City because for the first time in my life, or maybe the second time, a national TV show decided they wanted to publicize what had happened. I'd been jailed in San Francisco for serving free food with Food Not Bombs. Many people have been jailed for doing that, and not just in San Francisco, but I was one of the first, well, I was the first in San Francisco to be convicted of serving free food and sentenced to a jail term for that specific offense. It was actually violating an injunction against serving free food. And were you in the studio audience? I don't remember. Were you actually, did you come down, or did you just meet me at the...
It was this one of those pre-recorded type of interviews. You just put me on your little tape recorder. And
I got you. Let's take this call and see if we can get some. Maybe some other folks are gathering for this great reunion here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I thought you were convicted of contempt of court.
I was, but it was violating a court order, which is the same thing.
Oh, I see.
But I had nothing.
What was the court order?
The court order was not to serve food with Food Not Bombs in the city and county of San Francisco.
Oh, so that's what you were convicted of, the contempt. Okay.
Violating the court order.
Yeah. I see. Okay, I just wanted to clear that up.
Sure.
Thanks.
All right. You had actually been involved with a number of injunctions, but you were, how long did you stay with that squad? That was...
I was actually in a squad down the street called Serenity House that was a little smaller. We only had like 17 people, but it was right around the corner from C-Squad.
That's what it was. I remember it now. Yeah, C-Squat. And Serenity still exists, and Sea Squad still exists, or they were, you know, they were, we were driven off. What happened?
No, they are one of the lucky few that have escaped eviction. Dos Blocos, which was a huge building on the same block of 9th Street, had been evicted and turned into supposedly low-income housing, although I hear a unit's going for $350,000.
Not too low. You have been in New York for a couple of years, though, right?
I've been back in Santa Cruz for a little over a year, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And do you stay in touch with the folks in the squats?
I do, and there's a big change happening in New York right now, facilitated by one of the council members there, Maria Alvarez. I hope I got her name right, in the Lower East Side. And I haven't read anything about this, but I've heard from a number of folks involved that the city is offering the buildings to the squatters at a cut rate of $1 if they can bring their buildings up to code, and now it's more of an internal struggle of whether people want to be assimilated.
And what would that mean, bringing buildings up to code? And how does that mean being assimilated? Give us the... spell it out for us rubes here.
Well, it means doing things by the book, and squatters as a group in general are averse to that. It means spending a little bit of money. I mean, it means probably using new materials rather than salvage materials. It means being inspected. It means paying a monthly tax. All those things that you're basically homesteading to get away from. But it's like either that or get evicted.
Isn't there some kind of a law that says if you've been there a certain period of time, you establish ownership? Or is that what they're in fact saying? You can, but you have to bring it up to code after you own it.
Well, that's... the buildings were occupied under the adverse possession law, which states that if the city, most of these are city-owned buildings, knows about the inhabitants of a squatter building and provides them with utilities, most of these buildings have water and electricity, that they cannot evict them without a legal process. Now, the legal process can drag on for years, but there is a process for eviction, and there it is legal to evict, even though those laws are in place.
In California, we have the I think it was the Costa-Hawkins Act. I may have the name wrong, but it essentially gutted rent control when it was in those few cities that have it in California, saying that in any case, you can rent control apartments, but only as long as they are not vacant. Once they're vacant, all bets are off, and rent control doesn't apply. So what it means is, as long as you can hold on to your apartment, you get to keep the rent controlled, let's say, with minimal increases per year. Does New York have anything like that? Do you have vacancy decontrol, as they call it?
Yeah, there was a compromise reached with the New York legislature and the landlords of New York City, whereby rent control was kept on the books. They've had a rent control law for some time. It had reached its limit, and they just renewed it with the stipulation that once the unit is vacant, it goes directly to market rate housing.
And has that had much of an impact on people you know, or do you know many people in rent-controlled apartments?
I know a lot of people are moving out of Manhattan to places like Brooklyn and Spanish Harlem simply because it's no longer affordable to be there. Even the drugged-out areas of the Lower East Side are being speculated upon to the point where, like I said, a single-unit condo on the block that I lived on and have seen many overdosed bodies on is going for $350,000. There's people from all over the world that want to live in Manhattan. So I would say it's more of a market forces kind of a thing that's forcing people out of the area.
Mayor Giuliani has gotten a lot of deservedly bad press, and particularly on this show, for his attacks on homeless people, not to mention the run-of-the-mill person in New York City. You have any comments on Giuliani's regime and any indications of what's happening there now under Giuliani, particularly with respect to people who live outside or who are, quote, homeless?
Well, somebody who lived under his regime, I'll have to say that the guy was out of control. But if you look at what's happened, he's gotten his comeuppance. He's been exposed as the liar and hypocrite and basically megalomaniac that he is, and he had to withdraw from his higher aspirations of going on to the New York Senate and possibly the presidency because of his aberrant personality. This, you know, guy basically ruled New York with an iron fist, and the police department was his right hand. And I've seen many occasions where they took their orders directly from him, which is unusual for a city that size.
Do they now no longer take orders from him? Does he now no longer rule with an iron fist?
I think that he's lost a lot of credibility through his own personal problems and through Hillary Clinton winning the Senate seat that he was supposed to occupy. I think he's going to go quietly. He overreached himself, basically, as far as I can tell. The city of New York will always have a little bit of chaos. He tried to make it orderly, but, you know, you can't keep that many people orderly and polite.
He simply wanted to impose order. Order! I'm sorry, I got to relax there. Okay, well, but what about the situation for the average homeless person? Has it gotten better? I mean, I read some story last week that he's still locking people up who are out on the streets using the pretext of a medical emergency because it's cold. Would you say that's a good thing, that he's running around swooping down on folks? I mean, I was a little alarmed, but there's some who might say, hey, there's a lot of, you know, wild and crazy folks out there, mentally ill, quote-unquote, people who need to be, you know, hauled in the winter for their own good. What do you think?
Well, from what I understand, it's he's using a technique whereby a large city-run shelter is set up away from the city center. There's one in Brooklyn, which is with razor wire, and it has curfews that basically prohibit whoever's living there from leaving. Because it's so isolated, if they want to get there caught, they have to be there all day. And it's like an internment camp. And, yeah, people are picked up in vans and taken there and dropped off and, you know, basically told they can't leave, even though, you know, it's not like a prison, but it's like a homeless internment camp. And this is the model for getting homeless off the street now.
Well, I know we've heard a lot about how wonderful Mayor Giuliani is from somewhat conservative Republican sources who talk about how the streets of the city have been emptied of homeless people. A, is this true? And B, what does it actually mean?
Well, I know when I first moved to New York in 93, you couldn't really go anywhere in your car near the major arteries without a bunch of squeegee men descending on you. And Giuliani, one of the first things he did to put his foot down is to say, I will get rid of these squeegee guys because they're an annoyance. And he got a law passed that, or enforced, and very quickly, the squeegee problem went away, and he took that on to enforcing laws against public smoking of marijuana, public drinking, all these kind of things that New Yorkers had gotten used to almost over the years. When I first moved there, I used to hear gunfire regularly at night, and I would look around the room and hardly anybody was flinching or even noticing, and that definitely leveled off. So the conservatives have a point in that the crime has gone down, the public drunkenness has gone down, people are picked up for lesser offenses, but to what end? How much freedom do we sacrifice to get that?
We have a call here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I'm on the air. I heard the power just went out.
Oh, we still got power here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Oh, sorry.
Better say something important here.
No, I have nothing else to say than that.
Fuck the FCC?
Yeah, you can say that for
all
me.
Right.
Thanks.
As I join in these infantile obscenities, but actually getting back to the real obscenity, which I guess as I watched Giuliani's regime from afar, I thought, wow, not just what a jerk, but what a dangerous jerk. How did you feel under Giuliani? Did you feel a process of increasing security? Did you feel, oh, these streets look cleaner and, you know, less people here, I feel more comfortable? Or did you feel, uh-oh, he's coming for me? What was your reaction to him?
I never felt that uncomfortable walking around in New York. A lot of people look out for each other. I hardly even believe the crime statistics, although I never lived there in the 70s when it was skyrocketing. I did notice there was just an increased police force, a cop on every corner. You can't walk anywhere in New York without seeing a beat cop. And this is the technique that they use, is called community policing, and it's just high visibility, and it doesn't, you know, people won't get away with as much low-level crime, and yeah, you see less people pissing on the street, but that never bothered me. I suppose if you're somebody, you know, coming into town from upstate and you want to see a nice, clean Broadway show, you know, yeah, you love Giuliani. He cleaned up Times Square. There's no more sex shops there. Disney has taken over. You know, it's a clean, family, fun kind of place. And there's a lot of people in New York that want that. Not me. I went there for the grime and the grit and I enjoy that kind of thing. And so for me, it was like taking away my freedom to be who I am, to get away with who I am, which is pretty hard in Santa Cruz sometimes.
We're going to make sure you don't get away with who you are. Grab him, gentlemen. All right, actually, just kidding. What about the police? We've heard that, 41 bullets in Amadou Diallo's body certainly cut him down to size. Has there been an increase in police violence under Giuliani, or is that just some sort of liberal myth?
I can attest to that firsthand, and I've seen it in Tompkins Square Park, where a friend of mine was asked to produce ID. He was being hauled in for drinking an open container, and he produced a passport. A U.S. passport clearly states right on there. And the policeman threw his ID down on the ground and said, "This isn't valid ID." And when he went to go pick it up, tackled him, put his elbow right into his back, put his face to the ground, and handcuffed him and dragged him all the way from the center of the park to the paddy wagon. And that was extremely violent, and I thought it was typical of several occasions of that summer. When we went to complain at the precinct house, they told us that none of the complaints forms were in English and that we would have to make do with the Spanish ones. And so we had to go get our Spanish-speaking friend to fill out the complaint forms. Of course, no action was ever taken, but this is just one story in many, many that I heard. And I would say the police were out of control because they were given license by the mayor. They were saying, basically, the commissioner and the mayor said, "This is your city. You know, it's Giuliani time. Do it what you will." And I'm sure that since then it's been pulled back a little bit. Luima and Diallo and these things that happened, I don't think the police are going to be getting away with that kind of attitude as much.
What about marijuana? We've heard, I was reading last week on the air, endless upsurge of arrests for not just possession and use of marijuana. Is that still the case? I know it was, I would imagine, under Giuliani earlier, but is it still the case?
Well, what happened was he started informing his captains to enforce the low-level marijuana laws, which actually, under New York law, provide for some very stiff penalties. They still have Rockefeller-era drug laws there. And the theory was that if they pulled somebody in for smoking a joint on the street, that he would most likely have other criminal activity in his past, or that he had a warrant for his arrest, or the low-level crimes would lead to a bigger bust. And so he just hauls in everyone and tries to fish out as many of the bigger criminals as he can. This is what he says he's doing. It's called a quality of life crime.
Is the election of Hillary Clinton going to make any difference in New York City?
That's a good question. And I think it will, because a lot of people voted for her in New York City. I think that she'll be a good power broker to whoever's in there next.
You didn't even intend to stay for this interview, but you were literally kidnapped. I told them that I would seize your stash and confiscate it. Just kidding, folks. We are not talking about anything illegal, and nothing illegal is really happening here. Except, of course, for some free radio Santa Cruz, which the FCC mistakenly feels, under pressure from the National Association of Broadcasters, mistakenly feels that micropower radio is illegal, when in fact it is the regulations promulgated by the FCC and their pals in the corporate media that are actually violating the basic constitutional rights that we all should be having. And some of us are exercising 24 hours a day here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you, Devoid, for being with us. I guess your show will return next Thursday at 4 o'clock.
That's right. Check it out.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
All right. We'll see if I can harass you next time with some more questions. And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm the man from 6 to 8 on this beat. I'm your political police chief here, Uncle Robert, or Bathrobes Pierre Robert, as some call me, because of the bathrobe I wear when I wander around. Yesterday, for example, when I went to court, I had a bathrobe with my little teddy bear, Edwina, and her End the Sleeping Band button. The point, of course, is that homeless people, not just in New York City, where near fascists, or why don't we just say straight fascists like Giuliani, reign, but in places like Santa Cruz, where you have so-called progressives masquerading as liberals, such as Mayor Fitzmaurice, backed by Sugar, Crone, Porter, Riley, and perhaps Kennedy and Premack on the city council, also are the folks who are running the city. Well, actually, they aren't. They aren't running the city at all. But if they wanted to, they have the power to assert control over a runaway staff, over a runaway police department, over a, one might even say, runaway city attorney, although the city attorney, I think, probably takes his cues from the other departments. Certainly in the case of the injunction, which we fought in court yesterday, and I'm going to be talking about, actually it wasn't yesterday, it was Wednesday the 10th, the city attorney came to the rescue of the mayor, who was just apparently going out of his gourd because a small number of people for a limited number of hours a day were sitting in the public area of his office with a little sign that said, End the Sleeping Ban, and were requesting to meet with him and or with other council members to deal with the situation of 160 spaces for shelter and more than 1,400 or 1,500 homeless people out there every night, miserable weather, lethal accidents and $54 fines at night, 41 dead, that's 41 names specifically, by the Homeless Services Center on December 21st, and no action whatsoever from the newly elected Santa Cruz City Council or from the holdover, old regulars, old hands, know what they're doing, professionals, folks who have gotten their feet wet, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar. Folks who actually now have the council majority. For anything they want on homeless issues, I would imagine they have a council majority. They might be amended somewhat, they might be asked questions, but if Fitzmaurice came up with a proposal to set up shelter or to deal with ending the criminalization of homeless people in some way in Santa Cruz that was in any way reasonable, like ending the sleeping ban rather than, let's say, the entire camping ban, or setting up a couple of campgrounds, there might be a period of controversy, there might be some protests, there might be some public discussion, but he has the votes to do it. So it's not a question of not having the votes, as we heard this endless lament from Mayor Sugar for the last 2 years. It is a question of lacking the will and being afraid of enraging some of the conservative supporters. And I'm not thinking of a majority of the community. I'm thinking of people with money, people who happen to be kind of in the brain trust or lack of brain trust that runs around behind this this mayor and this city council. I mean, it's, I guess I'm naive, but when I go to the election rallies and I hear council candidates tell me personally, like Ed Porter did, that he's going to call me back in a week, I damn well expect to be called back in a week. I don't expect Ed Porter to show himself off as a liar after a week in office. I get rather upset when that starts to happen. And Ed, if you're listening, which I'm pretty sure you're probably not, but you're welcome to respond to this later, I expect you to keep your word when you speak to an individual, even somebody that doesn't have a lot of money, even somebody that isn't a close friend of Marty Wormhout or a close friend of Catherine Byers or any of the other supporters that put you in office. I think when a politician gives his or her word, their responsibility is to keep it. And I would say the same for all the rest. Now, politicians sometimes misstate themselves. We're all human beings. We all make errors. So, hey, you know, we got to be reasonable about these things. But it is unreasonable to leave in place a law that criminalizes homeless people between the hours of 11 and 8:30 each night if they fall asleep or cover up with blankets. That has been generally agreed by the Santa Cruz community. There's not really any debate on that issue, really. There may be debate on what areas you want to set up as campgrounds. There may be debate on how do you police and deal with the situation, but the idea that homeless people should be denied the basic human right to sleep at night is not really an issue for debate among reasonable people. Here we have a call. Let's see if we've got a reasonable caller here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, hi.
Hey, it's Bob LaMonica.
Do you remember the bag full of laughs novelty device maybe 15, 20 years ago, maybe even 30? It was called Bag Full of Laughs.
Okay.
And you would set it off, and it would just laugh. It would go, ha, 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 ha. Well, as you've been talking for the last 5 or 10 minutes or so, I've been thinking about that as a response to your request.
You have been laughing at my incredible...
No, I've been imagining the laughing, the bag full of laughs sounding.
Oh, okay.
You've been requesting some rather stern requests.
Yes. Well, I think they're pretty reasonable requests, actually. I mean, but, you know, they did it in Portland, they did it in Austin, they did it in Miami, and the sky did not fall in. I think restoring basic human rights for poor people is not that wild or crazy an idea.
I got to say that I will speak that I'm somewhat shocked at the outcome of the hearing.
Oh, my hearing
yeah.
yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I think most observers would have thought it would have been a slam dunk.
Well, let me tell the audience what happened briefly, so that we can, you know, let everybody else in it who isn't aware. The city council's Mayor Fitzmaurice, through Anna Brooks, this is how I view it, got a restraining order against three activists, me, Becky Johnson, and Bernard Klitzner, in order to stop a 17-day lobbying effort that we had done 2 to 4 hours every day during business hours in the public area of the City Council offices, Room 10 down at 809 Center Street, which is where the mayor and the city council members have their office. The woman's name is Anna Brooks. She decided we were harassing her, or at least that's what the papers said, and I have no doubt that she would have preferred that we were not there. We would have preferred not to have to be there. I mean, it wasn't like it was a wonderful, joyous time for all of us. Was a pain in the butt, frankly. The whole business of spending hours and hours and years of one's life trying to deal with a basic law like the sleeping ban is just completely ridiculous. But given that, Anna Brooks, through the city attorney, served by the police department, the Santa Cruz Police Department, who tracked down myself and Becky Johnson. We weren't very hard to track down. We're pretty public. But there were five cops who kind of came after me. Two of them cornered me in a shoe store and served me with an injunction. Actually, I wasn't trying to get away. I was trying to get a pair of shoes.
In a shoe store, no less.
Right. It was in the shoe store across from the Del Mar Theater. And I said, okay.
You must have been, you were followed and watched.
They were looking for me, no
yeah.
question about it. In fact, when I stopped, an officer said, did you call me? And I said, no. He said, well, you're Robert Norris, aren't you? You stay right here. And I said, no, not likely. I've got business to do. Am I under arrest? He said, oh, no. I said, well, then what do you want me to stay here for? Oh, I think we have something for you. What he means, of course, was he had legal papers to serve me that would have made it, did make it, illegal for me to be within 50 yards of City Hall.
And the status now is?
Well, now, what happened was we got some volunteer attorneys, which is very rare. I haven't gotten volunteer attorneys for years, but these two are really great, Kate Wells and David Beauvais from Berkeley. They came down to help the three of us. Well, Kate lives here, and David came down from Berkeley, and they spent many, many hours writing legal pleadings that I could never have even considered writing. So what happened was we essentially filed a counter motion. First, we said all these allegations by Anna Brooks that we have been harassing her are just ridiculous. That's not true. She's picking out selected instances of things that happened over a number of days, which annoyed her, but they were quite natural. She claims we stole her pens. Not true. I never stole one of her pens. In fact, when I heard that she was missing pens, I offered to buy her a whole bunch of pens, to which she responded that she just didn't want us to steal her pens, and she didn't want me stealing any more of her pens, and so forth. And I found such accusations inappropriate. I told her so. Perhaps she didn't like being told that. But we were never threatening or intimidating. We left when the office closed down. We arrived several hours after it opened. There was no basis for any of her stuff. But Mayor Fitzmaurice, in the midst of this whole situation, decided he wanted to get rid of us. We know he did this not because we are psychic or because we're paranoid, but because he would come out and say to us, leave the office. And we would say to him, no, this is a public reception area, Tim. You know, if you want to talk to us and deal with this issue in an adult and responsible way, then maybe we can, you know, leave the office now. Everybody can go home. But at the moment, we're here in a legal capacity as citizens exercising basic First Amendment rights. So he didn't want to, you know, deal with that. Instead, he just sort of snubbed us and said, "You're harassing my staff." And I said, "Really? What are we doing? You're making speeches at the top of your voice." I said, "Okay, that kind of accusation requires that from this moment on, we will record everything that goes on in this office so you can, any member of the public, any member of the judiciary can see that every single thing we're doing is legal, is responsible, is respectful, is completely within the bounds of our constitutional rights, and that what you're doing, contrary-wise, and threatening us and demanding we leave, is using the color of law by a public official to intimidate us." So, anyway, they went to court, we went to court, and Judge Stevens in Department 7, after making us sit through every single case in front of us, we get to wait until the end of the calendar, and after paying $200 apiece, mind you...
For what, Robert?
You had to pay $200 to respond to Anna Brooks' allegations. This is...
To file a response.
A response. In other words, if we wanted to make a legal response, we either had to file a response or you had to declare you could. There was an opportunity for fee waivers under some circumstances, but Anna Brooks paid no money to make this response. I mean, to get this injunction, to file this application.
When did you finally come up in the calendar? What time was
it? Came up around noon after waiting from 8:30 till...
And the outcome was... In specifics.
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I have a tape of what happened, and I'm going to play actually what happened before and what happened after, because though I got permission from the judge to play it on the air, it is not really good enough to hear on the air without really carefully listening. So, but I'm gonna briefly tell you what happened. I'm also going to play some interviews with the attorneys and with other folks who were in the corridor and interested in what was going on.
Well, let me listen in, and congrats.
Hey, thank you.
Okay.
All right.
All right, Robert. Take care.
Hey, thank you. And yes, I appreciate that support. I think the best way to support us, of course, is to call City Council now, tonight, and this means you, Bob, at 420-5017, which is the number for the entire City Council. And tell them, A, stop wasting city money with injunctions against activists that will really involve the city in more costly fines and costly penalties. Because after this hearing, we have another hearing. After yesterday's hearing, we're going to be going back for a second hearing on June 30th, where we will be charging that the city is violating our constitutional rights, and we will be seeking, I believe, fees and possibly damages. Certainly fees. I'm not quite sure about the damages at this stage. That may require a separate legal action. But call 420-5017 and tell City Council, hey guys, your job is the welfare of the community, not stifling dissent. Your job is dealing with issues that are matters of public concern, like the sleeping ban, not trying to get rid of the activists who bring them up. That's not your job. Your job is to address these issues, to discuss these issues, to find answers. Your job is to pick up the report that the city manager threw down and threw in the trash can that Christopher Crone voted in June of this year, where he requested that the city manager and the head of the Homeless Services Center, Ken Cole, find out what places throughout the city were possible locations for people to sleep in on private property and possible buildings for the city to use for shelter. That has not been done month after month. Both the city manager, Dick Wilson, and Ken Cole have ignored this issue. Cole has an excuse. He's busy because he's overloaded. I don't think the city manager, Dick Wilson, has an excuse at all, except he does whatever he wants. And the city council apparently doesn't want to hold his feet to the fire on this. Of course, meanwhile, outside, take a look out your window. It's cold. It's wet. People are dying. And look at the stats. 41 at least dead last year. Highest number ever. So, we went back to court, and we had actually a very brief hearing after waiting for 3.5 hours, more or less, or 2.5 hours, 3 hours. I was there, kind of wrapped up in a bathrobe with a teddy bear, again trying to draw the attention of the community in a kind of a theatrical way to how crazy the Santa Cruz laws are around sleeping for poor people outside, and Judge Stevens essentially told us almost immediately that he didn't want to hear any evidence yesterday. He didn't want to hear our defense. He didn't want to hear the prosecution's case, because the first thing he needed to do was to determine if this whole thing was a violation of constitutional rights, and the way to do that would be to examine the arguments that we have for this whole thing being a slap suit, this whole legal action by the city attorney, by Anna Brooks, by Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice, being a slap suit. What is a slap suit? That's an acronym, SLAPP, for a strategic lawsuit against public participation. And it is something that governmental authorities and corporate authorities use to tie people up in court when they could be out being activists. Instead, they're spending their time writing legal briefs, waiting outside the courtroom, trying to get a hold of attorneys, and generally enriching the coffers of the legal profession, or just making everybody poorer, instead of doing what they need to be doing, which is informing the public about real needs in the public arena, which is what, frankly, we were doing in the offices of the city council. And in a sense, kind of ironically, we were successful, because the amount of media we've gotten through this lawsuit has been more than we could have hoped for by simply sitting there quietly. What we really hoped, though, of course, was that there would be some action like last May, when we had a similar, we called it a Waiting for Sugar protest. At the Waiting for Sugar protest, after a few days, and I think it was after a week for sure, Sugar just decided he didn't want us in the offices, and he scheduled meetings to discuss dealing with the sleeping ban situation. He proposed something that was inadequate, badly flawed, but a first step, and we said, fine, we appreciate it, we left the office. So there was not, you know, there was no, you know, the lobbying had its intended effect. We didn't need to continue, because at least some kinds of discussions were going on under another, in another group. It turned out Sugar eventually held closed discussions, caved into the businesses and the police, and that wasn't good, and there were many problems with that. But at least the Waiting for Sugar lobbying effort had a positive effect. We'd hoped the same effect would be with Fitzmaurice. We didn't hope too fervently, because Fitzmaurice seems to be more conservative, seems like a Republican in green garb, frankly. That's what he looks like to me. That's what his votes seem to have been on numerous issues over the last 2 years. But we did so anyway, because in winter it's really the most important time to bring this issue up to the community. It's the time when the need is greatest and the people's ears are most likely to be the most attuned. That is to say, not so much the city council, but the community. And the community can get the city council's ear if its voices are persistent enough, loud enough, and rational enough on this issue. So Judge Stevens, who had mistakenly granted this injunction in the first place, he shouldn't have done so, not just because we weren't harassing Anna Brooks, we weren't, but that because there were First Amendment issues involved, he issued this restraining order, I believe, on the 26th or the 27th. He may have signed it even earlier. And it was done without a hearing. It was done without any notice to us, other than when we received it and told, stay away from City Hall, 50 yards, can't come to city council meetings, can't come to the city offices, otherwise he'll be arrested. His responsibility, and he failed on this, was to hold a hearing first. Well, now I think to some extent Stevens is trying to make up for that mistake that he made. And he is saying, in essence, I'm not going to rule on the question of whether this restraining order should be made permanent, is a legitimate restraining order. I want to hear first why you think it's a slap suit. And he postponed that whole thing until January 30th, because under the law, you're required to give the city notice. And that is, you need to give them 3 weeks' notice. So we had to do that. And during that period of time, he kept part of the restraining order in force and also lifted some of it. What he told us was, unfortunately, almost all the restraining order is still in force for casual behavior at City Hall. If we want to come and, let's say, hang out at the fountain, if we want to have a meeting in front of City Hall, we can't do that. If I want to walk from the library with a book and sit down at one of the benches at City Hall, I can't do that. If I want to go look for someone who I think might be at City Hall, I can't do that. What I can do, and the only things I can do, and Becky Johnson and Bernard Klitzner can do, is we can, A, go to any public meeting at City Hall, B, we can go to any office other than the mayor's office and the city council offices. That is the only office that really matters in terms of changing the sleeping ban, and in terms of talking to the city council members. We can go to all the other offices, but not that office, but only if we are going there for business purposes. So that really constrains us. So I think they will also be included in this modified order. No longer will we be arrested if we drive past City Hall. We were told that the previous injunction said you can't even drive past City Hall, in essence. We will still not be able to be, let's say, stand across the street at the library. That's within 50 yards. We still won't be able to stand across the street at the Civic Auditorium. I may not be able to go to an event at the Civic Auditorium unless that's construed as a public meeting. I don't know. I may not be able to attend a rock show at the, although it's hard to say. It depends on what the city chooses to prosecute. So there are still real, serious restrictions on three people in this community who are activists, who have committed no violence, made no threats of violence, and engaged in no harassment of the city council staff. You know, we've had some harsh words with city council members, and I would encourage a city council member who feels that I'm harassing her or him to take me to court for that. But please don't hide behind your staff. Please don't hide behind Anna Brooks. You know, don't make her the sacred scapegoat here, in the sense that, you know, she's the woman you're saving from the railroad tracks. She's the reason that you have the right to be macho. She's the reason you have the right to start abrogating people's constitutional rights. No, if there's a crime being committed, if I was, in fact, as Tim Fitzmaurice claimed, speaking at the top of my voice for hours on end in his offices, I would say that 30 seconds of that would constitute disturbing the peace, probably 10 seconds, and that would be the basis of an arrest. And yet, no such arrest was ever made. No such charge was ever leveled. No. What happened was these people used legal trickery to repress basic constitutional rights and to end a protest. And that is what they're going to have to answer for in court on January 30th. But the problem is really bigger than this, because our real issue has nothing to do with their slimy stuff, their slimy tactics. It has to do with their refusal to deal with public issues. That is the real point here. The point here is that homeless people outside need real relief. They need to be decriminalized. They need to be able to sleep in groups so they can sleep safely for fear of getting beaten or for having accidents happen, which people are less able to deal with in alone or in small numbers. They need to be able to sleep in well-lighted areas, which are safer. They need to be able to use police services without fear, which they can't do if they have warrants out. Now, the city council knows this. Their task force to examine the camping ordinance set up by Catherine Byers to avoid doing anything else, anything real, still amassed a lot of evidence around this. And they had police officers on their task force. Came to the conclusion there was no magnet effect. Many, many dozens of hours of hearings. I have most of them on tape. I was silly enough to go to them. I mean, I actually wasn't that silly to take them that seriously, in the sense that I knew, I was pretty much convinced that this was not really going anywhere. But when people make like they're going somewhere, and several of the council members, I think, sincerely at that point, that early stage in 1998-99, wanted to go somewhere, Keith Sugar and Christopher Crone, before they became corrupted by the power, that we had hoped that they would learn and they had take the courage to really raise their voices. But instead, we kept hearing from Sugar and Crone, we're only two votes, or with Fitzmaurice, we're only three votes. And Catherine Byers, you know, she controls things. We got to wait until the elections of 2000, and then we'll have five votes, and we'll be able to do what we want. Well, the elections have come and gone, and those voices have said nothing. Instead, they blame the activists. They blame me. They blame Becky Johnson. They blame David Silva. Instead of taking the responsibility onto themselves, that we have not taken the action we committed ourselves to 2 years ago. We have not raised homeless people from the status of second-class citizens to people who have the right to sleep at night, for God's sake. If we can't do that, then all the little crumbs, the snacks that Fitzmaurice provides at the Armory, the extra hour of sleep, the big grants that mostly go to the mid-level bureaucrats, the new kitchen that homeless people have. And it's a nice kitchen. Well, you know, they have access to it for two meals a day. Maybe three if you want to consider, two, breakfast and dinner. I don't think there's a lunch at the Homeless Services Center. All these little improvements don't mean a great deal if basic dignity is denied, if certain basic rights are trampled underfoot, you know. And I think most people know that. As I said, it doesn't take a great genius to realize that, and shouldn't take hours and hours of speaking about the issue. So let me turn to what happened actually in court, since I have at least one listener I know, or hopefully still with me, in spite of my long tirade here, who is interested in this issue. Let's see here. As usual, I have to play with the equipment a bit. I'm going to begin playing some interviews from the corridors of Santa Cruz County Courthouse. It happened yesterday, and I'll stop occasionally to do some commentary, and if anyone wants to call in, and the call-in number is 427-3772, I'll invite you to do that. I also want to let you know that today at 7 o'clock there is a community television showing on Channel 27 of Club Cruise, a show that I often enjoy. I don't usually watch it on television. I don't ever watch television much anyway, but I sometimes help to put it together, and I'm a host on this particular show at 7 o'clock for those of you who have community television, and Scott Graham is my guest. Scott is, of course, frequent co-host here on Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, which is the show you're listening to on Free Radio here, and what this is Free Radio, by the way, that you are listening to at 96.3 FM, in case you were wondering. So you might want to tune in from 7 to 7.30 to catch Club Cruise, which also airs on Tuesday. Tuesday show and the Thursday show are the same show, and it's on Channel 27 on community television on cable access. There's also a show at 7.30 tonight on the same station, Channel 27, Voices from the Village, with, I believe it's Charlie Phillips, and it's going to be talking about third-party candidates. I bet it's hosted by Paul, is it Sanford? Or am I thinking of Sanford and Sons? In any case, it's a discussion of third parties, and I'm always happy to talk about and to see third parties operating, though in Santa Cruz, when I see the Green Party operating and allowing people like Mayor Fitzmaurice or Citizens Police Review Board head Arnie Leff to act like they're green but take no meaningful public action to enforce Green Party policies, I get very cynical. And I know there is a Green Party meeting this weekend for those who want to go to it. It's at the Loudon Nelson Center. I believe it's from 4 to 6. I could be wrong about that, and perhaps if Green Party activist David Silva is listening, he wants to call in and correct me, that would be great, or anybody else out there who has information. In order for our city council to take the positions that they need to be, first of all, forced at least to take the positions that they committed themselves to when they ran for office. And if they can just turn right around and ignore their commitments, then we're in real trouble. And, of course, we are in real trouble because that's what they routinely do. But the Green Party, with respect to Fitzmaurice, has, I think, a strong influence. The Green Party can get together and they can censure Fitzmaurice. The Green Party can get together and they can disassociate themselves from Fitzmaurice and suggest he can call himself a green all he wants. It's a little sort of tinged with kind of more, it's more chartreuse or puce, kind of a yellow-green, I would call it. Now, maybe that's being unfair to Tim, calling him a coward, suggesting he's yellow. Rather, I would say he's taking a... I don't really think that Tim is a cowardly person. I don't... Although, I don't know. I mean, based on his action around the injunction at City Hall. But I think his position is really one of... He's sort of a timid person, I believe, in taking any strong public stance on really controversial issues like this. Medical marijuana... We've seen the destruction of Kate Wells Cannabis Club because Tim and Sugar and Crone and all the rest of the city council, and I now have to include the new city council, have not taken any action to declare a medical marijuana emergency, which, for example, was done either up in Oakland or San Francisco and would have allowed the larger 600, 800, maybe even 1,000 member cannabis club to stay open. Instead, it's dissolved. It's dead. And we have this very glossy article in the current Mother Jones about WHAM, which is a small marijuana club, which is headed by Valerie Corral, but can't possibly meet the needs of everybody in town being heralded everywhere and what a wonderful group it is. And yeah, I mean, I'm glad that that group exists. But it really, it saddens me that the city, and angers me, that the city council took no action to keep the cannabis club alive, and people are now looking for their medication in illegal places and dangerous places, particularly for people who are elderly and people who are ill. And Sugar and Fitzmaurice and Crone are the three people to blame for this, as well as, of course, Police Chief Belcher and City Attorney Barisoni and City Manager Dick Wilson. Any of these people could have spoken out on the issue and could have taken action on the issue, could have lobbied on the issue. In fact, if any of them had, we wouldn't be in the position we're in now. It's really as simple as that. Similarly with Ed Porter, and similarly with the Green Party. The Green Party has been very silent on the medical marijuana issue as well as on the sleeping ban issue. So that gets my goat. So those two shows are happening. The Club Cruise starting at 7 on Channel 27. For those of you who have cable TV, that's Scott Graham's Views on the World. And you can probably get a little of Scott Graham tonight. He may be listening in to this show. He's was one of the lucky few who was able to go to the city council meeting last Tuesday that I wasn't able to attend. That was two nights ago. I was barred from that meeting. I will be able to go to the next one. There is a council meeting on next Tuesday, a special meeting. I actually have the agenda for that meeting. And I'll be talking about that later. Hopefully I'll be getting some input from more knowledgeable people on that particular upcoming meeting. It's two meetings. One's a 1:30 session on information technology update. This is Tuesday the 16th. And there's a 3 o'clock session where the advisory body appointments happen, which includes the Citizens Police Review Board, for those of you who want to see changes in the police department. I don't suggest really the Citizens Police Review Board is the way to do it, but I guess any public forum is always better than no public forum. And even the city council recognizes that, because that's why they cut off our mics, that's why they arrest us at city council, that's why they keep us out. That's why they get these restraining orders. Because they are just sick and tired of hearing the same, why aren't you doing what you said you were going to do, and what needs to be done kind of talk from activists like myself and others. Well, let's visit the corridors of the courthouse here and see what, or hear what we can hear. Having a little power problem here. Let me work on it here. I think we're going to be okay. Let's give this a try.
Do you feel a chilling effect?
It's a little cold out there.
I feel a chilling effect.
It's kind of cold and wet. Not only indoor, outdoors, but indoors.
Well, by the way, what does the bathrobe and the teddy bear symbolize?
And the sleeping band.
The person we're talking to is Ken McLaughlin of the San Jose Mercury News, who actually wrote a story about this in today's Mercury News. You can check it out. It's still on the stands. I may even read it. But here is the raw material from which he took his story. I was in the corridors outside Department 7 with my attorney. We were waiting to go to court, and I was wearing a bathrobe, as I said, with Edwina the teddy bear, and we had a number of other defendants there, Jerry Henry, who's also been the subject of an injunction out in Aptos, was there with several youths who were supporting us, and so we had quite a... Well, it was a small group of supporters there. And, of course, on the other side, Leslie Cook was there. I'm not sure why she was there. I think Anna, she's the city clerk. Anna, the woman with the concern about us, was there, Anna Brooks. And then Paul Lee, for some reason, was also there, apparently as a supporter of, or perhaps an interested observer. But when people from our group tried to talk to him, he was very, very frosty about the whole thing. So let's listen to this conversation in the corridors, and maybe we'll learn something, or maybe we'll learn we didn't want to hear it. I think you probably would enjoy it, though, so let's go for it.
That's what that means.
Did you, before you came out
here,
turn back and take a look at Teddy sitting there?
Teddy?
Yeah, he...
Oh. He was in the courtroom?
In the courtroom. Pointed out to Becky.
Right.
He's sitting there like, this is...
He is depressed about the proceedings.
He looks terrible.
Teddy who?
Teddy. It's Edwina.
Teddy.
Edwina, the teddy bear. Yeah. She is very depressed about the whole situation. I mean,
she looks awful.
She's a homeless person. There's only 158 spaces for more than 1,300 people, a figure which rarely appears in the media, but is true nonetheless. This is the attorney of record, by the way. David, this is Ken McLaughlin of the Mercury News.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Hi, David.
You going to record on the other side?
Yeah, I do. Nice white sweater you got on today.
You know, we have declarations, Ken, you might want to look at that kind of give the story. Can we let him see the declarations?
Oh, absolutely. Give him a copy.
I don't have they're in the car, which is a block away. Can we borrow yours for a minute? Or?
I don't know if the door's locked.
I could get him after the hearing.
Okay.
Oh,
yep,
after
now, they're long. They're long.
Might
you might
be able
want
to get
okay.
set.
Yeah.
I'm
what is the essence of your case?
The essence of our case is that, first of all, this is an action to enjoin supposed harassment of the mayor's assistant.
Right.
The defense to the case is, number one, that the defendants did nothing in the office that was disruptive of any of the ongoing operations, nor do they cite anything specific saying that they were impeded in the performance of their duties. Two, there were no actions taken that constitute harassment as defined by the statute. That is, there was no severe emotional distress inflicted upon the plaintiff by anything that these defendants did. Third, this is a...
But where does that come from? Is that the case law? Or?
Yeah, the case law says that the emotional distress has to be so severe that, and the conduct has to be so egregious that no one in a civilized society should be expected to endure it. I mean, that's the language of the court. So.
And you're listening to Attorney David Beauvais talking to San Jose Mercury News reporter Ken McLaughlin, again, in the corridors right before the court hearing. He's describing our defense to this slapsuit court order that Anna Brooks and Tim Fitzmaurice cooked up to eliminate the protest.
Phrasing. Uh-huh. Okay, what we have here is somebody tendering a $20 bill for a small number of copies. People sitting quietly in chairs. A minimal conversation going on between the defendants and the plaintiff. The real problem here is it's a small office, and the plaintiff's uncomfortable having people sitting in her office for this amount of time. That's what this is really about. It's not harassment by law. And then, of course, there's the Constitution of the United States, which says that you have a right to petition your government for a redress of grievances. So since that's the activity that they were actually engaged in, this is a slap suit. It's a strategic lawsuit against public participation. And the law says that when a person is sued for exercising their constitutional rights, that the judge should strike the plaintiff's pleadings and award the defendant's attorney's fees and costs. And we're asking the court to do that.
The proceeding today, is it going to involve taking witnesses?
That's up to the judge. The judge has the right to allow limited cross-examination.
Okay.
Whether he will or not, I don't know. Our declarations are very detailed. So, you know, on the basis of what's there, he could decide it just on the written declarations.
Okay. Is it unusual for it to go from a temporary injunction to a permanent injunction so quickly? Is it skipping over steps?
No, it's not. These are expedited proceedings.
Okay.
So this is normally the way it's done.
Okay.
I don't know. They just ended the recess.
That's Anna Brooks over there.
Yeah.
And there's Leslie Cook, the city clerk, and I guess I recognize Paul Lee.
Who's representing us for the city?
John Barisoni.
The one with the coffee cup?
No, she's the one with the black.
Okay. Now, your background is you've been involved in slap suits before?
I have, yeah.
Okay.
In a lot of cases involving First Amendment claims. In this court, in fact, I was involved in the 1996 case involving the demonstration at City Hall. You may remember that.
1996 case? Okay.
Yeah.
City Hall sleepers protest.
Okay.
It was the county of Santa Cruz versus, or city of Santa Cruz versus 45 people who were having a nighttime vigil at City Hall.
Again, on the same issue, the sleeping ban.
What was the result of that?
The injunction that they sought was just to keep everybody away from City Hall. Well, Judge Stevens didn't allow that, and he set some terms and conditions for people to be there.
Okay. So you maintain this, the essential problem is not harassment, it's just it's that just she felt uncomfortable because it was very small.
And that's part of what she says in her declaration, right, that she felt uncomfortable just having people in her office, in that office. And then she goes on to justify it by making a number of assertions that we claim were either exaggerated or were not true. And in addition to that, the mayor was complaining directly to the defendants at that time about them being there. And he didn't file a declaration with the court in this case, which we thought was unusual because he was really the driving force behind the filing of this action. Is quite obvious to us based upon what we know.
Also, the mayor repeatedly told protesters to leave the area.
Barn 7 is open for business.
And he would tell protesters, I want you out of here, often in a threatening tone of voice when he spoke to them. We have some of this on tape, which we are presenting six audio tapes to the court.
Today.
We'll try to, but we don't know if they're going to hear it actually in court because there's so much testimony involved.
He would say, I want you out of here.
Yeah, I want you out of here. He said this to Bernard Klitzner, who is one of the defendants. He said it to a man named Reed Fanning in my presence. He said it on tape to other people, and we felt this was harassment from him, but we realized that, you know, he had a right to his opinions, and when he started using his official position to do this, it kind of crossed the line. We feel that the whole lawsuit is an attempt to accomplish this purpose.
And unfortunately, what you're hearing now is a very low version of Judge Stevens talking in the actual court proceeding, which I was able to secure permission to record and broadcast, but you can't really hear it, so I'd like to skip ahead. While I do, however, I will hopefully amuse you with a bit of another, sort of an educational bit of tape. I wasn't able to go to city council meeting on Tuesday night because I was barred by this Fitzmaurice-Barisone-Brooks injunction, as I call it. But instead, a woman, Laura Tucker, an activist, a mom, a person who's been homeless and has been fighting the sleeping ban herself for many years, went in my stead and gave a speech, and some of it was a speech that I had written, and some of it was in her own words. At the end of that speech, she mentioned that she was upset that Tim Fitzmaurice had called Becky Johnson, that's one of the other activists who is being barred from city council for asking, is being barred from the offices, and was previously being barred from city council for trying to bring up the issue of the sleeping ban. We're asking, Laura Tucker was upset that the mayor was saying of Becky Johnson that her behavior was an abomination. He actually used that word, an abomination. Now, I'm not terribly thin-skinned about those kinds of things. People have a right to use whatever language they want to describe other people. And I am myself unstinting in my criticism when I feel it's appropriate. But the interesting thing here is that Tim Fitzmaurice doesn't, just like he doesn't want to take responsibility for the sleeping ban and for his promises to end it and to deal with it, doesn't want to take responsibility for what he actually has said on tape. Now, I have the tape here that I'm going to play for you of Tim Fitzmaurice characterizing Becky Johnson's behavior as an abomination. Yet publicly, two nights ago, he either lied about this or forgot about this. Depends on how you want to interpret it. Here's the tape. You make up your own mind. This is a telephone call that Tim Fitzmaurice made to Becky Johnson in response to one of the many requests she had while she was doing the City Council Coffee Clatch and Tag Team Teach-In, waiting to get to talk to council members to try to get something going over the vacation to set up a special session so there could be some emergency action taken to stop more deaths and to decriminalize sleeping and to let homeless people have basic civil rights again.
Hello? Hi, Becky. This is Tim calling support. I don't think I'm going to have any appointments between Christmas and New Year and without checking with my family. I'm going to have appointments at the beginning of January. I'm sure you'll be around. I'm sure we'll be able to make a set up a time. I'm not going to make any appointments while you're sitting in the office and annoying the staff. These people are doing work. I think work is a sacred act, and it's something that shows it's an element of a person's life, and the idea that people would harass them while they're trying to do their work is an abomination to me. So anyway, I know you don't see it that way, but I do, and so I'm not going to make any appointments while you're sitting there, because you're not really doing all that much to me, but you're doing a lot to them. They have to work in those conditions. I don't know why you don't see it that way, but I guess you don't. So we'll make an appointment in January, although we've already spoken on this particular topic. I don't know what else you have to say to me about it. I'm sure you'll say it, you've written it, but anyway, I'll be glad to make an appointment again in January, beginning of January for you.
Now, I believe this conversation happened on the 19th of January. This is the very time Fitzmaurice seemed to be scheming with Barisone and Anna Brooks to shut down the whole protest with an injunction, or very close to that time. Not talking to the participants that he had concerns with and say, look, I'd like to set up some guidelines in the office about concerns I have, and we can talk about that. In fact, I actually asked to meet about such decorum guidelines at City Council, because in the last year, Mayor Sugar has had me arrested 3 times, cut off my mic a considerable number of times, engaged in Brown Act violations that involve cutting other people off many times, and there's numerous things that need to be discussed for there to be both a civilized dialogue at City Council and a dialogue that doesn't masquerade as having decorum, but actually leaves people outside in the cold. See, that's what the sleeping ban and the current City Council do. They act like they have decorum, but part of their decorum is to maintain the criminalization of sleep at night. And that's no decorum. That's sort of criminal behavior by the City Council, in my view. That's the kind of behavior that violates the Geneva Conventions, the UN Declaration of Human Rights, the U.S. Constitution, and so forth, as well as sort of basic religious tenets of most of the world's major religions, and the state constitution as well, guaranteeing liberty and safety. I think it's for health. It's not health and safety. It's liberty and safety. It's an unusual addition that the California Constitution has over the U.S. Constitution. So, that was Tim Fitzmaurice. In his own words, and I'm here on my struggling with my equipment here, I apologize. I'm going to be playing in a moment again more of the actual court hearing that we had yesterday. Before I do, let me check out a few things here. I actually was going to give a speech yesterday before the hearing. We had a press conference, but the rains kind of washed away the press conference. Or, in another sense, the press conference happened kind of somewhat later as we waited in the halls of the court. We actually didn't have media until much later. We came at 8 o'clock, but media didn't show up until 10 or 10:30. I guess it's those bankers' hours for those media people, or maybe we were the third, you know, from the bottom on their list, and they finally got there and finally proceeded what they wanted to do. But it took a while for them to do that. But we eventually got that, and we had some really interesting conversations between the media folks and the attorneys and some of the defendants, and I'm going to play that now. This happened after the court hearing, at which I said there were some modifications made. We're allowed to go to City Council meetings now, the three of us, Bernard, Becky, and myself. We're allowed to go to offices in the City Council complex, provided we're going there on business, except for the mayor's office and the city council office. Of course, that's the key office, but as I said before, but nonetheless. And we will be coming back on January 30th at Department 7 at 8:30 in the morning to urge the court to strike this whole thing down as a slap suit and grant us costs for our waste of our time and money and the violation of our civil rights in the first place. Now, whether that's going to happen is really an open question. Doing a little monitoring here so I can speed the tape up. And there we go. I think we are eventually reaching appropriate area here. I apologize for not having this ready for you. I rarely do.
Including the planning.
About finance, planning, parks and recs, and a
this is my attorney and I trying to make sure that I get the right to visit various offices.
They're further away than the city clerk's office, but still within the radius. It's basically public offices that.
In regards to access to those offices, this has been a core purpose.
The judge is saying for purposes of access to the offices. For business purposes.
Your Honor, one other thing. We have copies of audio tapes and one videotape that have been, I believe, supplied to Mr. Barisoni. We would like to give these to you.
And there's a bit more discussion here, and there's some sort of legal working out as to when the attorneys have appropriate time to come to the next hearing, which is always, attorneys always get the convenience discussions, whereas defendants are told to show up. It's kind of the differences between having a law degree, yep, being a privileged member of what's going on. So, in order to give you something to listen to right now that I think is educational and interesting, I'm going to play for you while I cue up the press conference section, an interview I had about a week and a half ago with two very eloquent and very well-spoken activists from the Mountain States. A man named Gentle, who's also known as Reed Fanning, and a man named Zane, who also styles himself as Inzane, who seems to me to be the furthest thing from Inzane at all. He's a man in a wheelchair. The two of them joined us around the time of the reading of the names of the homeless dead at the Homeless Services Center, and then stayed for about a week and helped with the protest and they had some rather strong opinions, and I'm going to play an interview with them now. I really am. Here it comes.
You said you wanted to mend your ways with the mayor.
Yeah, I want to make sure that he knows I'm not at war with him either, because, like I say, he walked by one day, and it was the same day that he had.
Sorry, a little bit of a glitch. Here it comes.
She went on smiling. I want to get back with the mayor again and make sure that
this
everything is mended with him. Because as he passed one day when we were sitting outside.
And there's a bit of a blank on the tape, but hang with us. These little technical problems.
You said you wanted to mend your ways with the mayor.
Yeah, I want to make sure that he knows I'm not at war with him either, because, like I say, he walked by one day, and it was the same day that he had talked with Brother Gentle, and they'd gotten to that confrontation about leaving the office and harassment inside there. And I said, the issues are not going to go away. We are not going to go away. We need your cooperation. We need your communication. You need to talk to us. But most importantly, we need your courage, you know, to do what's workable, to do what makes sense, to no longer fall and give in to the pressures of the Timex, the Texas Instruments, the Tektronix or whatever.
Plantronics.
Right. Yeah, those interests are always going to demand that nothing stay the flow of their pursuit of the dollar. And unfortunately, humanitarian issues are not profitable. For the most part, they are not profitable. So big business is always going to demand profit over humans every time. But that doesn't address the problem. And without humans, big business is nothing.
Now, you said all this to Tim?
No. No, I stopped that. We need your courage, because he wouldn't stop. He was walking away. I talked mostly to his back. Mm-hmm. In fact, since my first meeting with him at the memorial, That
was at the Homeless Services Center Memorial, where the names of 41 homeless dead were read on Thursday, the 21st December.
Right. I talked to him that day, and I simply asked him. I shook his hand, and I said, "Hello, Mayor. So are we going to be able to do something about these ordinances?" And he looked at me and said, "You have to keep advocating. You have to advocate. They have to advocate. Everybody has to advocate." So he encouraged me to keep advocating. He just doesn't want me to advocate in his office.
You don't mean in his office. You mean in the foyer. We actually were never in the mayor's office at any time during these last 3 weeks, except on one occasion when two of us were invited in, and that was actually, we actually had a conference with him for about 25 minutes. That was on one occasion.
Yeah, I wonder what he would think if I set up a tent in his office.
You mean in his office or in
sure,
his in the foyer?
Pot. You know, make a drop pot coffee, you know, break out some Zuzus, you know, have some donuts and coffee with the mayor, you know, for my take. Come on in. I got a lava lamp in here, bro. Yeah. I got some incense going. Here, have some patchouli oil. Yeah, they call it hippie deodorant. I don't know.
So that was the last conversation you had with the mayor?
Conversation. The one and only conversation I've had with the mayor was that day.
Right.
Everything else has been one way. I've been talking to him, and he hasn't responded, so...
So there has been no... I misunderstood. I thought that he had at some point had come up to you in the last day or two and made some friendly gesture or...
No, not really. Not really. It was more talking to his back. He smiled. So that's a good sign. I hope he keeps smiling, because I'm not at war with him either. I'm not at war with anybody except indifference and ignorance and fear.
I never got a smile from him.
Gentle says he never got a smile. What about the last 2 days? Some of us are concerned that things haven't changed so far in spite of what we've all been doing, although we have gotten some media publicity around the issue through this restraining order, ironically, and I guess that's to some extent what happens here. The authorities overreact and act inappropriately, and the issue gets in the media, even though there hasn't been essentially a peep about the sleeping ban in about a month and a half, probably about 4 months, other than, let's say, through occasional comments during the election campaign of some of the candidates, and, of course, no action from any of the victorious candidates, and no real action from the people who didn't win, who presumably would have been, if they cared about the issue, pressing it anyway, even though they didn't win the city council election. So we've gotten no reaction, no forward motion. But the protest has prompted, as I said, an overreaction by the city council. It's an inappropriate TRO, that's the way I see it. An attempt to punish the protesters, to drive them away. You weren't driven away. I mean, you and Gentle chose to continue protesting on the corner, apparently with some success, drawing more people. How did things go in the last 2 days?
It went real well. We sat there with a few of the signs that your organization has been using in the past, one that says stop, stop the war on the poor. The sleeping ban is a violation of human rights. The clear messages. And we sat there peacefully. Some of them carried. We had Brother BC. He's a black brother. He's homeless. He joined us, and he was carrying one of the signs, and they would make a circle around town with the signs as I sat there. I sat, and I read, and I waved, and I smiled, and I gave the peace sign to passersby. And I just watched the reaction of people. There was denial. There was outright, grrr, dirty hippie, get off my street, dirty homeless scumbag, leave, you know. But for the most part, I would say 80 to 85% would respond with either a friendly nod, a smile, a peace sign back, a wave, and sometimes the power to the people sign and a honk of the horn. So people understand. You know, it's not like we're beating a dead horse here. I think we're beating, we're not beating, we need to soothe a wounded horse and make him run again, and that's the spirit of the human adventure, the sharing that, and the understanding that we are family. Okay, and we have to take care of each other. That's what the whole point has always been. It may get lost in the quagmire of capitalism. It may get lost in the conflict of interest of the money agenda. But, you know, when all said and done, the whole point is to create love. I like the old Beatles expression. And in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. You know? So let's all start making love again, folks. That's another point. You know, you brought up earlier. I was thinking about the drinking thing. You know, when we lose homeless brothers on the street because they're opening a can of beer and drinking, what do they do about sex? You know, I heard the other night there was an incident in the armory where a couple went in. They had to have their intimacy, and there was no place for them to do it. I didn't have the money for a motel room. You can't, when you yell, "Oh, go get a motel room," when you see a couple of people necking or something, they don't have that luxury. So right in the middle of the armory, they started getting it on. And they were told repeatedly, "You can't do that here." And they would settle down a bit and go back at it again. I hope they got some satisfaction out of it.
Now, I understand that the manager of the armory, Berkeley Billy, was ousted and then denied access to the armory. Had you heard anything about this?
No.
because I know that, that was one. He had come up and told us this, and we'd hoped to talk to him and haven't been able to speak to him about this. I take a different perspective than you do, although I admire your perspective, which is, you know, the attempt to heal these wounds, which I think is great. I think before you can heal them, you got to cauterize them, and you got to stop the instrument that's making them. And that the problem there is, of course, that you have a system that's doing it.
Well, you have to realize, brother, peace, the instrument that's doing them needs the biggest healing of all.
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So the cauterization and things like that is in the individual, the groups, the organizations that are legislating and abusing authoritative control and so on and so forth. They need an internal evaluation. They need to face and look at their own monsters and allow them to turn inside of them and become allies to us all. Mm-hmm. Because that which is hurting us will eventually become our strength if we can understand it. If we have the courage, that's where the courage comes in. The evaluation of what we're doing, why we're doing it, and what eventually is going to overturn it. Turn it around and heal. Fight to heal, not to punish. See, we live in a system right now that fights to punish. Punish, 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 punish. Okay? Punishment doesn't work. Punishment like that, on a wide scale, rampant, infectious, contagious, viral degree, has never worked. It can't work. Punishment, people rebel against constantly. Education, communication, and compassion always works. Always works, but it takes time. And when you take the time to show compassion and give that time of education and so on and so forth, of course you're cutting into the profit margin. Okay, it's not profitable.
Yeah,
so
but I'm talking about the activists and what the activists need to do. I mean, you'll be back in a number of days, and we're having a meeting of the homeless working group today at 3:00. And I guess my question to you is, do you have any suggestions to activists in the next few days, in the next few weeks? I guess you'll be back to give that suggestion yourself in person. But should people continue the kinds of protests that have gone on? Should they adopt other methods? What do you suggest?
Okay, well, looking at the little history I've seen. So you're the investigative reporter. I'm the old hippie. All right. Looking and feeling what is currently here is an impasse. Okay, it's them and us. We need to overcome that. All right. Protest. Maybe the word protest needs to be thrown out. Let's just concentrate more on education. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to educate the public at large that we are family. I'm going to try to tell them and explain to them and show them, take their blinders off, what they're afraid of. They look at the homeless, and they're seeing a failure of the society they embrace. They're also seeing a possible future of their own, and it scares the absolute shit out of them. And therefore, there's an instantaneous, almost automatic dehumanization. Well, that can't happen to me, so therefore, they are not human. Because
what
I
specifically,
am.
Though? I know we all know this. I mean, many of us do. I'm talking about specific tactics that you would suggest people might want to follow in the next few weeks. We have a city council meeting coming up in early January. The city council agenda will be framed in 5 days on Wednesday at the latest on next Friday. And is there something you want to suggest that activists should do in that time, or do you think it's such a much longer-term process that we really need to be looking at?
You don't like my answer. I already gave it to you. Education. Talk. Open your mouth. Open your heart. Talk at the core level of what this issue is really all about. Not the political song and dance, not the legislation, not the Section B, you know, Paragraph 3 crap anymore. That's not working. That's not working. All those things are going to have to eventually be modified. All those things are going to have to be addressed in those particular forms, in those manners. But we've got to look at the motive. Why do we do the things we do? Okay. I don't have all the answers. I do know that
I don't want to talk to you. Just kidding, folks.
There is no sweet. There's no angel sitting on my shoulder. There's no some kind of a benevolent, wonderful alien race sitting right above me in some aircraft that's going to come down and show me how to save the world. I do know that we can change the world, but
you are promising to bring 50 more activists to town to, should we say, engage in peaceful education. Right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Okay. I'll bring as many as I can while I'm here. I'll convert the demon hordes. You know, back in the little hippies, man, that smell like patchouli and have lava lamps growing out their ass. Well, you know, I'll do my best, you know. I just love people. I love the whole idea, but most of all, what I love is the challenge, okay? This challenge, this wonderful, wonderful hurtful, challenging thing that's going on. You know, we all need our challenge. If we can make a difference here, we can win. We can celebrate. I'm going to celebrate. I celebrate during the whole thing. You know?
Well, let me present you with today's Sentinel, or the urinal, as I like to call it. Three local activists halted.
Were you given a chance to say
on page
anything?
Two. I was. Heather Berner.
Are you quoted here?
I am quoted towards the end. I would say that the story heavily favors the authorities, although the headline I like, three local activists halted, and the subheadline,
the restraining order stems from a three-week protest of activists and others have conducted in a reception area of the council offices. They are protesting the city's homeless ban, arguing that the homeless should be allowed to sleep outside without being harassed. Hey. Accurate.
That covers it. Now, the story itself is full of, shall we say, omissions and inaccuracies.
Oh, sure.
But nonetheless, you know, some of it got out. I don't think we would have gotten this had the city not overreacted, and so in a sense, that's a victory. In another sense, of course, it makes it more difficult to continue what we were doing, but maybe what we are doing had kind of reached the point of it did what it could.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I'm glad to see you're going to be coming back. Any final words you have for those of us who don't get to go up to Santa Rosa?
Fight to heal, not to punish.
Thank you, N. Zane.
Right on, bro. Love you.
And that was Mr. Zane, or N. Zane, as he sometimes calls himself, a man in a wheelchair who was with us for the last week of the City Hall Sleepers. No, that was the City Council Coffee Clatch and Tag Team Teach-In. And confusing my different injunctions and protests. There's so many of them over so long a period, it seems, just to deal with so simple a thing as the right to sleep. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. It's the all-talk 2 hours. We have a little music at the beginning and the end. In the meantime, you get to listen and join us, we hope, at 427-3772, 831-427-3772. For anybody who's listening on the net, this does stream on the net at www.microradio.net/FRSC. We are Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3. Again, studio talk line is 427-3772, voicemail line 427-4523. In case you want to send in a tape or a news brief, public service announcement, money. Post Office Box 7507, in case you want to mail us something. Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And again, the webpage, www.microradio.net/FRSC. This looks like a caller coming in here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, Bernard.
Hi. I just thought we might get into a little more discussion of, you know, of the actual protest in the office.
Sure.
I think that you were in error, and, you know, when you just said that about what we could do. You know, maybe that was as much as we could do at the protest, you know, that particular one. And I don't think so. I think that just by the fact that you had these city officials, you know, wanting us out of there, you know, shows me, you know, that some kind of motion, you know, was beginning to happen. Just because, you know, we're in the thick, you know, of that, you know, of that movement, sometimes, you know, we don't see the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were just kept in that one little tiny room. But I think that there were some real motion going there, and I think, you know, possibly, you know, if we ever can get our rights back, you know, to go in there, that we should really think about getting back into that situation.
Just resuming the lobbying, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I'd
like to hear your, you know, thoughts on my thoughts.
Well, remember, I mentioned, have you been listening to the show?
Yes, I have been listening to it.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned earlier, we were, I think, successful like 6 or 8 months ago in getting this issue, along with other protests that I've also had a strong effect, like the FAST by David Silva and the PIAN and other things, on the agenda when we did this in May and the Waiting for Sugar lobbying effort, which is really identical to what we did here, although it was done for a much shorter period of time back then. So I think, yeah, I think it did have an impact. I think, you know, I think it's always good to be creative and flexible in one's protest, particularly when you're dealing with
heavy-handed bureaucrats and people who are hedged in with fears. And Zane is much more, perhaps he's much more compassionate. I kind of feel like we're dealing with a machine here.
I think that Zane, if he just, I don't know where he's at, and if he comes back, I think he's going to come to that same conclusion down the road. But I think he needs to come to it, you know, on his own, on his own terms.
Well, I know that one of the concerns I have about our activist community is we have so few people who are really participating in this particular time, in this particular protest. I mean, you can compare it with 1996 when there were like 45 named people on the injunction. And that actually there were only two or three at any particular time, but they were there 24 hours a day in front of City Hall sleeping. I don't know if you were around for that. But
no, I didn't participate in that.
Yeah, that's what was going on kind of back then.